Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and I'm just getting back from a beautiful gathering in the desert in Joshua Tree called Contact in the Desert. I would say we had about 3,000 people, very open to alternative ideas, particularly ETs, but other dimensional awarenesses. And I met tonight's guest there. We can call her Lucinda Lapping Eagle. That's one name she goes by. And lots of very interesting stories that I was inspired by when she relayed her transformation. So welcome to the program, Lucinda.
Thank you for having me.
I would say, you know what really impressed me is that you came from a very sort of ordinary background, and yet you had these full-on awakenings, these full-on transformations. Can you talk about some of that I know, but I think it's really fascinating, like your progress, like how you got from, you know, being like not so aware of this other realm, and now you're fully in it.
Yeah. Talk about trial by fire, huh? You just kind of, yeah, it's interesting how you know, first, as I think, who said it? Was it Oprah that said, you know, the first it comes in little whispers, and if you don't listen, eventually, you know, the universe is going to throw a brick at you and just say, this is what you're going to do.
Exactly. So how did, I mean, you didn't have any awareness of any of this. I guess, I don't know, you said sometime before you were 40, and then you went to some, was it a reader who said this is going to unfold for you? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I essentially kind of always had the only kind of intuitive sense I had was some sort of small intuitive voice that just kind of said to me, you know, don't worry too much about what you're doing. It's not, nothing is really going to happen for you until you're around 40, until you have your children. Which was interesting, because I had never consciously planned to have
kids. That's an intuitive voice you had that came to you, that's your own inner voice that said that to you. Is that what you're saying?
I always assumed it was just my own inner voice, but, you know.
Okay, so what? How did it start to unfold, this awakening?
It started to unfold, as many things do, you know, with moments of stress. Really, I had found myself, again, at the age of, it was actually 38, and I had very quickly, between age, you know, 31 and 38, had gone from single girl living in the city to mother of two, married, living in the suburbs. And I told my husband one day, when my youngest was 2 years old, I said, you know what? I don't know who I am anymore. I literally just need to take a break from everybody and have a little time to myself to figure things out. And so I took a road trip. It was actually a women's retreat in Sedona, because I figured, okay, that's safe. That's something I can do. It's a women's retreat, organized, fine. And at that retreat, I had a lot of very kind of intuitive and spiritual awakenings that were strange for me, because it was a new phenomenon for me. And so it culminated, all these experiences, with me just asking the woman from the retreat, you know, I said, you know what, I think I need like a reading or something. And right. She said, you know,
Can you just tell me what kind of strange experiences happened, what sort of types of experiences?
Okay, yeah, absolutely. One of the first things that you do at this retreat, you do a lot of meditation and a lot of, you know, thinking, a lot of talking, a lot of sharing. At one point you do a what's called a releasing ceremony, where you kind of, you have a rock and you sit and you're kind of channeling all of your negative feelings about yourself or your fears and just everything that you feel is really piling up on you. You kind of channel it into this rock. And then you go hiking up into one of these vortexes or something, and then, you know, you're supposed to release the rock to kind of, you know, as symbolically releasing your fears. Mm-hmm. While I was up there, I ended up, you know, I thought I would sit on a stand on a big rock and throw it off a cliff. I ended up cuddling, kind of hiding under some bushes. I literally scrambled under bushes, which is interestingly something I used to do as a child. I used to like to hide under bushes. And as I sat there in the dirt having my, you know, crying little crisis, I clearly heard what I can only tell you is earth, the earth under my feet said, "Give me your problems. I can transform them into something positive." And so without even thinking, I dug my fingers into the dirt and I left my rock there and I found what appeared to be like another round rock. Now I'm not even looking, I'm just kind of crying. And I felt this round ball and it said a gift that was like clearly in my head. And so I put it in my pocket. Later I didn't understand what was that great smell because it smelled like incense. And I asked the girls in the group, are you wearing a perfume oil or something? Something smells really good. Nobody could smell it. It turned out it was my hands because they were in my pocket. And the rock was actually what is known as a copal or copal, you know, I know it's the Spanish term for it, which is a resin that is used in Native American ceremonies for purification. And so I thought that was a really interesting validation. And I had not thought of any kind of Native American spiritual stuff since, oh, my early 20s when I studied it a little. And then, you know, the next day we were hiking, and I had never been to Sedona, and we were hiking on a trail. And as I'm in the middle of the hike, I can perceive a person to my right. Now, there was nobody there, and it was very odd for me because I'm looking forward, but in my peripheral vision, I could see what was like a spirit person, a young girl, about 17, long hair, Native American. I kept thinking Hopi. Hopi Indians are, you know, the Hopi people are in that area. So just Hopi came to mind, a Hopi girl. And she would talk, and I could hear, and she would say, oh, you know, that plant, if you boil it, it's medicinal, and you can use it for this. And, you know, we're walking up to the sacred altar over here, blah, blah, blah. And so I, you know, I'm getting this information, and so I just kind of, out of nowhere, asked the tour guide, you know, can you boil this plant to do something? Oh, yeah, it's a medicinal plant. Are we going to an altar up here? And he said, oh, yeah, have you been here before? And I just kind of freaked out and hung my head down and said, no. And I kept walking. And at one point I asked her, who are you? In my head, you know, just thinking, like, who are you? And she turned and looked at me and said, I'm you. She said, I'm you. And honestly, in a manner that like a 17-year-old girl would, like that little kind of like, duh, you know, I'm you.
Right.
And so that just got me in a tailspin. And that's what led me to just say at the end of it, before I was leaving, I was like, I need a reading. And
but I'm just curious, when she said she's you and you had the reaction, I guess we can get to it. Did you ever actually become her, or are you becoming her?
My thought is that I was her in another life. Like, this was almost like a past life regression. I have had a few experiences. I figured out that I think every decade I have a past life regression in a dream that is very kind of telling about my life. I can have them more so now that I've started studying this type of thing. So that goes back to the reading I had.
Oh, yeah. So let's go to the reading. So that...
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So this beautiful woman named Tara Sonora shows up at the door, and she says she's an angel channeler, which I've never heard of before. And we sit down together, and we have this great reading where she tells me amazing things that I had never shared with anybody, and she was just right on about everything. And then she told me, you know, well, you're a healer and you have all these healing modalities and you help people and it's a kind of a different way of healing. And she talked about all my past lives and mentioned the Native and the medicinal and things like this, like as a past lives as shaman and as priests and nuns and Buddhists, you know, Buddhism, so many religions, many faiths as healer kind of thing. Uh-huh. And she said, do you have any questions? And I said, well, yeah, now that we're talking about this, I guess, who is the voice? Because this is the same voice that I've heard all my life. And I call it that intuition, but it's that voice that said, don't worry about what you're doing. It's not going to happen until you're 40 and you have your kids.
Uh-huh.
It's the same voice it's a voice I hear very clearly that has gotten me out of very horrible situations throughout my life. You know, one day in college, I knocked on my friend's door and there was no answer, but I knew my friend was in the house and there was no answer. So I decided I was going to jump his little terrace and open the sliding glass door to go in. And as I turned around, that same voice, I mean, Alan, as if you're standing right next to me, said, do you really want to see it? Like that, like angry. And It stopped me dead in my tracks. And it had turned out that my friend had committed suicide and was in the house.
Really? And you didn't know that. You just heard that voice.
No, but that voice literally saved me from walking into something that I think would have really affected me horrifically. And
No, I'm just curious. Do you think we all have that voice and some people can hear it better if they're more tuned in? Do you think some
absolutely.
People have? Yeah.
No, I think everyone has this voice. I think everyone has access to this, to their own intuition. And here's the thing. I think for everybody, it comes in a different form, you know, and you just have to, each individual, honestly, it's like your life path, your mission in your life is to find that voice that is yours and follow that path. To me, that's your soul calling, you know? This is
yes. I agree. I'm listening. But in your awakening, I mean, so this woman tells you, like, you're going to do this and this is happening. And what's your reaction to it all?
It was literally like dominoes falling into place. Or like, you know, when you knock down the domino set and you watch it go. It was like doing a million-piece puzzle and having somebody give you, like, the last three pieces of the puzzle. Like, all of a sudden, everything made sense to me. It was beautiful. I mean, I drove from Sedona to the Phoenix airport just bawling the whole drive because it was, like, amazing. So many questions were answered just in that trip for me. And at the same time, it opened up a whole new set of questions that needed to be answered. She told me who that voice was, and here's the thing that really got me. She said, oh, this is, you know, you've had many incarnations, father, daughter, brother, sister, husband, wife. Your love is so strong with this fifth dimensional being of light, I had never heard that term, that he's not even in this lifetime, but you hear him so clearly, it's like he's there. And I said, what's his name? And she gave me the name of my childhood imaginary friend, which I had made up, you know. And it
maybe
floored
you made
me.
It up, or maybe you actually...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought I made it up, you know, but apparently not. So
you were tuned in your whole life, but now you're starting to just realize that, or when you were...
Exactly. You know, all of us start off tuned in, and then world and society and things tells you this is not what you're supposed to be thinking, and then you kind of fall into another path. And I think the real life purpose and life challenge is trying to toggle those two worlds, you know. You must know your soul calling, and you must live in this life that we live in now.
But you developed your, I mean, you had no idea about that up until that retreat, right? And most people live their lives with no idea about what their soul calling is.
Exactly. And you know, here's the hard part, because we live in this reality, you know, and so... What I find is most difficult for me in this path, I've done now I'm working as a medium. I do readings for people, and I've explored recently this whole shamanistic world has come into play. And here's the thing that a lot of people, that needs to be mentioned. We're all on this path, but we also have these responsibilities in this world. You know, I'm a wife and a mom, and I got to feed kids and stuff. So I can't just drop everything and, you know, go to Nepal, which would be great, you know. But so we have to balance. We have got to balance.
Right. So, but in your, you're developed now. You've matured. You've become awakened to stuff, to this whole other reality that most people have no idea. They're just in that ordinary world. That's all they know. So how can people start? I mean, you had a calling. You were somehow more in touch the most of your life or something, but for people who have no idea, but yet they want more, what do you say?
I say, I don't even know that that's true, Ellen. I think everybody has that little voice that's telling them something. So all I can say is to really sit still with yourself and listen. Really try to listen, because it's in there. You know, that little calling and awakening is in everybody. That's my feeling.
But what if you, I mean, I want to get back to your story, but I'm just saying, what if you did dive totally into that world without your foot in the, let's call it real world? What do you think? Would that not be possible?
I think it would be possible, but, I don't know. I'm still too, you know, I'm a mom of young children, and so that's such a prevalent thing in me right now, that, you know, this nurturing of taking care of my family and my, you know, my boys. And so it's interesting. So what I try to do is kind of parent from that perspective. You know,
right.
I try to listen to them and learn from them, right? And I think all of us can do that.
Well, that's the point I think I was trying to get to, is the fact that, you know, as a parent, you're teaching your children to grow up and be a part of the world. But how do you teach them to be not part of the system, of the unconsciousness, and stay aware, you know, as a parent, of these other possibilities, and not lose the connection to that inner voice? How are you teaching that to your children?
Okay, I'll give you a perfect example. Last night, my 8-year-old is very analytical, so he's very much in this world. That's just how his mind has always worked. You know, he is very kind of black and white. He works in this; these are the rules, and goes by the numbers. But last night, he was upset because he said he was feeling kind of down and tired. So he's kind of like a little depressed. I think he's a little sad because, you know, second grade is ending, and he's kind of a little down about that. And so my approach was to offer both worlds. So I said, first of all, it could be that you're tired because you've been running around a lot, and maybe you need a little more better brain food. So tomorrow we're going to eat really well, okay? We're not going to have any treats. We're going to eat really well, and we're going to drink a lot of water. We're going to have a lot of rest. We're going to get a good night's sleep. And he said, okay. And then what I did was I walked him through a guided meditation without telling him. You know, he was laying down in bed because I was tucking him in. And I turned off the lights, and I sat next to his bed, and I kind of was like kind of rubbing his head a little. And I said, okay, here's what I want you to do. I want you to just relax your body, make every piece of your body really heavy so that you're really comfy. And I want you to feel your body and make the picture of your body in your head and find all the little dark clouds that you don't like that are making you sad. And now, and you know, I waited, and do you see a little? I think so. He said, it's okay, now we're going to bring in a beautiful gold light. And this light is all the happy times. It's when you go play at the beach. It's when you run around. It's when you're happy. when we're having fun, and I want you to bring that into your body and feel it warm you up, and it's going to push out all the little black spots. And
he did.
And today, a totally different kid. Happy, running around. He wasn't asking to watch TV or play on the computer. Like, he was happy to go out and play. And so...
That changed something for him. Yeah, I was just saying that.
And, you know, I offer that to him because he's more analytical, right? My other son, I would probably take just the meditative approach because that's more his personality. You know, he's more responsive to that. They're all different. So you have to kind of meet people where they are.
We're sort of almost doing battle, though, with this culture that wants to program that awareness out of us, right? I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah, so, I mean, and things are changing because so many more, I mean, we were just with 3,000 people who were awakening to these new realities, these alternative ideas. So there seems to be some movement, but I guess it does, it will come down to the next generation of sorts, right? It'll come down to how we educate the children, our children.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And teaching them that you can have both worlds. Because I think what we were taught was that you can only have the one. And if you wanted to experience any kind of spirituality, it had to be under the construct of some sort of religion. You know, that's kind of how we were, were offered. That was the only thing we were offered outside of the structure, you know,
right.
Another type of structure under the umbrella of this, you know, quote unquote spirituality. And I think what I try to offer my kids is that you can have it all, and you can have it all fully and completely, and you can integrate it any way you want to.
But to have it all, this is the conflict maybe I'm in, or to have it all, we sort of have to drop out of society. But I guess I don't know how to integrate it. I don't think a lot of people know how to integrate it, to keep the spirit alive when you're in corporate America or whatever you're pulled to. It's like, how can you have your foot in both worlds? How can you have it all? What's the secret to that?
You know what it is, Alan, and this is, it's funny you ask that, because this is exactly where this is what I've been doing for the last, 7 months. I have been so conflicted with that same thing, because I work in aerospace, okay? Yes, I'm surrounded by engineers. We build satellites, so you can imagine. And
it's hardcore. Yes, it's hardcore.
I also live in a very kind of affluent conservative area. So there's the whole elementary school dynamic with the kids and the moms. And so I've struggled a little the last couple of years trying to understand what I'm doing and keeping it secret. And I finally just had enough. And I told my husband, and I told my cousin who is gay, I said, I'm literally coming out of the closet.
Right.
And it's going to be like coming out of the closet. And I've experienced it. I've experienced what I've had with my gays. And we have this talk, and I'm like, literally, people have told me, you're the devil. People have told me, I'm going to pray for you. People have told me, that's
wonderful.
Why?
What did you tell them that was so shocking? What did you come out and say
that I'm a medium? And they're just oh no, that's the devil's work. And I'm saying, okay, but every reading I've given and all of the response has been that people would get closer to their faith, you know, and here's the funny thing. I've completely outed myself at work. I've completely outed myself with the mommies at school. And overwhelmingly, the response is support and curiosity. And
right.
It's shocking because, you know, like, you finally decide, you know what, I'm okay being weird. Whatever, you can judge me. I'm not here to live the life you want me to live. I'm here to live my life. Right. And when you decide that and just bring that out into the world, it has this interesting ripple effect where then you bring out the weird in everyone else, and it gets really fun.
But that, I think that's a key, because we all have to come out of the closet. I think that's the only way the culture will change fundamentally, if all of us are brave enough to say, this is who I am, this is what I believe, this is true for me.
Exactly.
We have to do that. We have to, because that's how it changes.
Exactly. And then here's the thing. You find out that is where truly, in the sense of the word, community happens. You know, because
yes.
You think of these old communities. You think of, like, Native American tribes. People just were who they were. And you had no choice but to accept a person because that was the person in your community. And this person had a job in the community that you needed everybody, you know, to get your community functioning. And so the more open you are and the more just you are who you are, people have to accept you, and then people want to accept you, and then it's not even an issue anymore. It just is, and it flows.
But can that happen on a large, I mean, we're pioneers. I'd say everyone at the conference we're at this weekend are pioneers. You think it is possible? I mean, what is your intuitive guidance say about the future? Is it possible that the world can awaken to who they really are?
Absolutely. Well, I think it's happening. You know what it feels like? It kind of feels like it's starting to snowball a little. Like I feel something shifted last year, and it was 2015, last year, that the early 2015, I was like, whoa, something in, like, the collective vibration, not just in, like, not people, but, like, everywhere, everything just started kind of, like, shifting up, and people were so much more intuitive, stronger, heightened. Whatever your little gift was started kind of, like, buzzing up, you know, boiling up.
I think that is happening. And did you see my panel this weekend on spirituality and UFOs at the conference?
Yes. Yes, I was in the front row.
And what did you think of that little argument that I had with Graham Hancock, where I said you don't need those substances anymore? I mean, I felt like he really attacked me because I said just what you said here, that the vibration is changing and there's an awakening and we don't need that. I mean, what was your feeling about that moment?
Honestly, so as the viewer sitting there, I thought you were both kind of saying the same thing. Like, I think Graham's, here's the thing. Graham's point was that it shouldn't be stigmatized. I think maybe the way he presented it could have been a little different, because his point was that people that do, like, ayahuasca and go on these journeys, responsibly, of course, let me just preface that, the people that do that shouldn't be stigmatized. But I think the way he came off, it was kind of like, this is the only way to go. And so you came in, and I got that. And then you came in and you kind of said, just offered so that to clarify, well, you know, that's not the only way to go. Right. And so that's where that came.
But I was also saying, I don't think that's the way to go. I mean, maybe it came out a different way, but I was trying to say, I don't think that's the way to go at all anymore, because the earth, the vibration of the actual physical dimension is shifting. That is opening us up to these other levels without that kind of substance. I've done ayahuasca. I've had these experiences, and I get much higher through meditation, through seeing incredible healer. I mean, it doesn't compare. And I think it's damaging the receptor sites of people who would be open, but they rely on these other substances, and it really it really gets in. Like if you were doing ayahuasca on that trip to Sedona and you had the same sort of mystical experiences, you wouldn't know if it was really good. And that's the problem I have with what Graham Hancock was saying, and people who start to rely on these external substances to increase their awareness of consciousness.
Yeah, so absolutely. You don't want it to be your crutch, right?
Yeah.
I had what, you know, everybody, describes their ayahuasca experience. I had a very powerful shamanic experience without any kind of substance. It was actually a shamanic drug. I was in like a drum circle, you know, one of these kind of healing vibration things where they play these crazy drums and it like just totally sends you into this trance state and you start, you know, going nuts in your mind. So, which works for me because I'm the girl that also can't take any kind of drugs without having like the total opposite reaction.
What kind of opposite reaction would you have?
Like, for example, I can't take Vicodin. People have their wisdom teeth pulled. Whatever, people take Vicodin. I take Vicodin, and I feel like I'm in a coma, but my body won't stop moving. Like, it acts for me like an upper or something. Like, I can't sleep. I get up. I'm jittery. I'm all over the place. So, and this happens with most drugs. I can't even smoke pot. It just makes me hungry.
So you're saying you had sort of a psychedelic experience just with drumming? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah. It was a shamanic, like a drum experience. And it was actually somebody that's traveled the world studying. He's a musician, a famous musician that kind of left the rock world to travel the world, study with different shamanic tribal drumming. And he has a studio in Sedona, and you know, you go in there and you lay on these mats, and there's everything from a didgeridoo to this huge Tibetan singing bowl, to like crystal bowls, to every drum you can imagine. He plays this music for you that's literally, you know, sends you into like a super deep meditation where you have these experiences.
Well, actually, I'm on my way to Sedona right today from Joshua Tree.
Okay.
I'll have to get his name.
I can just tell you because he's wonderful. His name is Three Trees. He goes by Three Trees.
Three Trees, and he has a. How do I find him in Sedona?
I'll give you his contact info.
You can text that to me. But I mean, anyone who's listening might be interested in too. But what I'm saying,
and you know,
is
Sedona's a small town. You'll find him.
Three Trees, his name is. Okay.
Three Trees.
What I'm saying, I mean, I don't want to get off your topic, but I think it's really important for what you are as a teacher is that, and the fact that, you know, I think ayahuasca, not to, you know, people have whatever path, and if that works for them, that's great. But I think people don't realize what their potential is, how evolved they really are. And I think that's like gurus. I think that same thing, those sorts of chemicals and even plant medicines that they're called for the mind are a thing of the past, a thing of another age. And there's something else happening now to us as humans on planet Earth that is much more miraculous.
I would agree with that. But okay, here's the thing. I agree with that, but there's a little caveat. And that is this. Again, I will go back to this. You have to meet people where they are. So, for example, I would say a lot of those people, the majority of those people at that conference, they're already kind of in this mindset. They're already on their journey. So, those kind of people, you know, I would offer, listen, I don't think you need anything to get you there. I think you're already kind of, you know, in tuned enough that I would try to just kind of do it like as clean as you can through your own body using whatever kind of channels you can, because it's just more rewarding that way. It's more of a validation that you do not need anything external. You don't need a person or a drug or anything to be the best of who you are. You're already that. It's not about looking out. It's not about looking outward. It's about looking inward.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I would offer.
Some people would say those drugs actually do bring you inward, you know, and that's part of what they do. That can be beneficial, I suppose, but I think it's just a lower vibration. We are ascending to something higher, and I think just those things bring us down. That's just my feeling, you know?
Could it be that you're just, because of who you are, you're just surrounded by so many people with that beautiful vibration, some people might need help with it. I don't know.
Well, I really agree. No, there's some people who are really dense or just need help. I do agree with you there, and I do agree with Graham, you know, but that people need help and they need assistance, and sometimes people need a door open for them to see what's possible. Absolutely, you know. You had the benefit of your own inner explorations and an awareness and your ability to be in touch with a feeling that took you to that retreat in Sedona. So, you know, that's been things that you've had. And people don't have that, especially they're caught up in the corporate world and they've lost touch with that. So, yeah, sometimes they need a plant medicine. Absolutely.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, like,
all right. Thank you
way.
For helping
it,
me see that. Yes, I don't want to I be would, dogmatic.
I would say this.
Either.
I would say maybe some people just need an activator, but not a crutch. Let's agree on that. Like maybe something to just open the door for you, but like don't get crazy.
and don't rely on anything outside of you know what. Who you are, but anyway, getting back to you and your work, because with this awakening, what does your work look like now? I mean, how are you progressing? Are you doing sessions? How are you working with your awakened consciousness?
You know, it's like, you know that, you know, Forrest Gump, that little feather. That's how I perceive my existence. I mean, I literally, because I'm not familiar with any of this, and this is still kind of a newer world to me, I perceive my reality through my intuition, which so far, miraculously, has not led me astray. For example, it was last September, all of a sudden, that Hopi girl that I saw in Sedona, who I had not seen since, came back into the picture. She came back into the picture. It was a meditation. It was super quick. She said one word. She said, shaman. And I, like, threw my hands in the air, and I said, oh, no, sister, I'm not going there. Because, well, you know, to me, shaman is a very sacred word, and I associate shaman with, you know, you are Native American, and as a child, you are chosen, and you work as an apprentice to a shaman, and it's a sacred thing, and I think that word gets thrown around a lot, a little too loosely.
Well,
so I was like,
I mean, it can get thrown around a lot, but you know, we are all becoming shamans, so I think, in a way, it's okay to be.
I know. We talked about that this weekend too, because you know, as the months progressed, more information came to be. By November, it was you need to see a shaman. By December, it was the shaman is a woman. And by January, I met a client because I was doing readings, and I met a client, and out of the blue, I said, I need a shaman. And she said, I know a really good one. Here's her name. And she just gave me her, you know, the funny thing is we both had our phones, and she said, well, let's Google her. And we Googled her name. And on my friend's phone, it was on the second page of the search results. And on my phone, it was the very first thing that popped up.
But you are a shaman, actually, anyway, aren't you?
That's what kicked off the journey. I saw that shaman. Because right before that meeting, the Hopi girl came back, said, it's time. You're ready. You need to be tested. You need to be given your name. And you need to have your ceremony. I had no idea what that meant. that's what kicked me into meeting this shaman woman. She said, pray to your name. I said, I don't know my name. She said, I will petition for your name. The apprentice was in shock because she said, this woman has people apprenticing for her for years and she won't petition for their name. She just met you and she's petitioning for your name.
Right, well, but and, you know, she recognized you, so it's not like she just met you. It's a vibrational feeling. I mean,
exactly. Exactly. That's what I had to figure out, Alan. That was the journey. That was the journey.
So is there still that resistance in yourself to who you really are?
That's a great question. You know, I struggle with keeping my ego in check because I'm in this weird place right now where now I've been called a shaman, you know, and now I do, you know, these readings for people and there's all this kind of stuff. And there's this weird angle where people are telling me I need to self-promote and that feels very businessy to me. And so I have to kind of toot my own horn, which I keep thinking, okay, well, but watch your ego. And so it's just this weird balance that I have to figure out. That's
right.
Still where I'm at, you know.
But do you feel, and this is what I get for you, I mean, I don't know, I'm just like tuning in, but there's a merging of you and the Hopi girl.
Oh, yeah. No, so that kicked me into a trip to Sedona. Not since I had met that Hopi girl, that was 2012, did I go, I went back to Sedona just this March, April, for a shamanic retreat it was just a retreat where I happened to meet three shaman who really guided me and took me on this journey to the point of they literally prepped me for that drum session with three trees where I had that profound ayahuasca, you know, type, you know, ayahuasca free experience that got me where I was. And now I can call in that energy. So now I get it.
Right. But do you feel at some point all those things that voice was telling you that, like, it will be not a surprise, not you'll be that. You'll be the embodiment of that, and the personality of Lucinda, whatever you want to call yourself, will be, like, more faded into the distance. Yes.
Yeah.
Or I'm just saying, is that a challenge because you'll lose your personality? I mean, you won't lose it, but you know who you think you are, your story, and all that won't be as real.
You know, and thank goodness for this vibration and this energy, because you're right. I am merging those two selves. And not only that, because I've always kind of had that other self, it's just been a little bit more buried, right? But as the soul version of me kind of, you know, rises up more out of the ashes and kind of comes into being into the external world, I find that it easily integrates. You know, it's that whole alchemist theory. Of, you know, yeah. when you ask the universe, you know, you say yes to the universe, it rewards you tenfold. You know what I mean? It's just,
but
it's fine.
I totally agree, but I'm just kind of using you maybe as an example or just saying, what is the resistance in you or maybe in me, because you're a reflection of me, that is stopping the total merging right now? Or is it a progressive act, or is there ego-based resistance from having that full embodiment of that higher being into this dimensional space?
One word: fear.
And what's fear. That? Yeah, that's interesting. Talk about that, because that fear is ego, right? Ego-based.
Absolutely.
But so, I mean, in all of us, not just you, but
because we are you know, we are not, we are souls having the body experience, right? Not the body having a soul experience.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like your true self has to navigate the skin that it's in and the world that it's in. And it's a little, it's a scary integration, because I think the more tuned in you get, the more you realize that you are just incredibly powerful. And
right. But the fear is the ego. The fear is the part, the false personality, or the personality in general, that thinks it's in control. And what we're all not realizing, or we're coming to realize, is that the spirit is the true self, and the ego, which is the fear, because your spirit doesn't fear, and in a way your body doesn't. It's just the ego doesn't want to be out of a job.
Uh-huh.
But it's not
exactly
real to begin with.
Yeah, you're right.
But how do we, I'm just asking, okay, you're aware of that, I'm aware of that. How do we turn around so we identify, you know, in your case, with the Hopi girl instead of the story of Lucinda, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting.
I mean, I'm not saying you have to have the answer right now. I'm just putting out the question.
No. Yeah, I know. And that, it's a great thing to think about, and it's a great question to often ask yourself. You know what I mean? I think that's a good little self-check for us to put ourselves in perspective. And
what?
You know, and this the notion as well of again, you know, just letting go and being yourself, and not, and having to be vulnerable. You know, I think a lot of fear comes from, well, if I talk about this, I'm going to be judged, or this person who I care so much for might not understand, and I'm going to be judged. And you have to just be fearless and be vulnerable and say, I have to do it anyway. I don't know any other way to be.
Right.
And when you
do that, you
literally squash your ego. Literally. Or I won't say literally, because that word. You are figuratively squashing your ego.
Right. But for you, I mean, if you want to answer, it's like, what would that Hopi girl want to say now to the people listening, with Lucinda out of the way, with like, can you access that space that's beyond the fear, the ego, and this just in the presence of truth? I mean, is there anything that, and not to force it if there isn't, but anything coming through from that space of consciousness?
That's an interesting, your timing, Alan. Okay, let me tell you. On Saturday night at the conference, there was the George Newry party. And
yes.
So I'm sitting in that party, and it's very loud, and there's a lot of, you know, the band's kicking on, and I just had this incredibly stifled feeling. And so I walked outside, and I kind of tuned out, and I, like, my intuition just kind of opened up. And I just kept walking. And, you know, it's a new moon. The moon's not even out. It's pitch black. We're in the middle of the desert. I just kept walking into the desert in the pitch black. And you know, I had this conscious thought of, aren't there critters out here? Like, you know, are there, like, some, you know, what, this is this dangerous? And my intuitive self was just saying, you're safe. You're on the path. Keep going. Turn here. Keep walking. And I found myself in the middle of the desert in the pitch black, and there was a bench out of nowhere. Okay, sit down. I had this meditative session wherein I called in that shaman self and had, like, a just, you know, a deep kind of reflective moment. So, you know, those panels were amazing. The conference, so much going on, so much to take in. And one message kept coming in from this shaman self, and it was a message given to me, and I'm telling you, it is a message for the world. And
okay.
It is just simply this: remember who you are. And it's not in the sense of don't remember, you know, you, yours is not to be concerned with what other people think of you. You know, your degree, whatever it is on paper is not who you are. Who you are is that beautiful light, that soul energy, the essence of you that came into this life, into this body of yours, and came with a plan and a mission. Your sole purpose in this life is to tune in to your own self, that essence of you, find out what that mission is, and or just get as close to it as you can, and try to make that your new reality.
Thank you, you know? For that. Yes, that is, and so that's a message for you as well, your personal self, right? As well as all of us.
Yeah, it feels to me like it is the message of this heightened vibration. Like that is what this kind of heightened vibration is trying to tell us. That,
yes.
You know, just everybody take a break. And we have tons of things to be concerned with, and they're overwhelming. And so let's all just kind of take a break. Let's just get quiet for a minute, and everyone just do some self-reflection and just try to get back to who you are. Remember who you are.
Is that sort of what's coming through now? Is there a sort of state of mind where you go to that place where you start to hear that? Or, I mean, I know it's just come to you out of the blue sometimes, but do you feel like there's a state that you can put yourself in where you can access that level all the time?
Yeah. But, you know, I have my moments. In fact, when I got back from that retreat in Sedona, because that whole shamanic experience was so profound for me, you know, and honestly, I'll tell you, when you figure out what your life purpose is and you have something like that, it's big. It's big, you know, and it's,
yes,
it's emotional and it's overwhelming. I was depressed. And
yes.
I haven't been depressed for a long time. And to come back home and then like, okay, you know, make sure all the homework is in the backpacks and get the kids to school and, oh, we got to go to work and there's all kinds of stuff going on and back to this, you know, conference rooms and this kind of stuff. I was like sitting there going, I have such work to do. What am I doing here? You know, and it was difficult. And I had to, and it took me a good couple of weeks to even realize that I was depressed, because that's what depression does. Depression hides from you, you know, it's sneaky.
But no, I know. But I mean, we should sort of wrap up. I didn't know. Sometimes we can run a little longer, but to get not to end on that note of depression, you know. But how can we, you know? So where are you now, though? Because you've progressed so far from beyond that point.
That's what I had to do. Once I realized I was depressed, it was like, ah, okay, so now let's take a step back. Let's tune in. And I set myself up for another kind of, you know, you have to arrange it because we're busy. You know, we have families, we're moms, we're working, everything. You literally have to set up an appointment with yourself to be alone, to meditate, to figure it out. And that was the message that came through. Just listen, be patient.
What?
Remember who you are. All in, but you know, divine timing.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me just say here that this interview is going to continue, but we're going to sign off live right now from BBS Radio. But you can go to the archives in the next few days and get the full interview. We'll talk for a little more, but another program's coming in live right now. But let's continue so people who want to hear this, the rest of the conversation, can go to the New Realities Archives on BBS Radio. Okay, just because I just feel there's a little more to be said here, and you know, they only give me an hour, but in the archives there's more. So let's continue, even though people listening won't hear it all right now.